another controversial beginning to the What You've Been Watching podcast. There's jokes that just make the editing room floor sometimes.
Mm-hmm. For the better.
I am your host, the marvelous Mike Dudley, joined as always by my co-host, cohort, and youngest brother,
MD3 Marcus Dudley, checking in on the YOU. What is going on out there in podcast land? We are broadcasting live from the Whatcha Been Watching studios right here in the shadows of Doak Kimball Stadium amongst the seven highest hills of Tallahassee, somewhere between us and you. What's going on, my guy? How are you?
I have not been good, actually. It's,
one time in the 80s.
Yeah.
But I did not enjoy it.
I don't deal with change very well, even, like, positive change. Yeah. And there's just a lot of that going on right now. So I'm not necessarily having full-on panic attacks, but, like, I feel it, you know? It's like, I feel it in my chest. Like,
yeah.
It's like, I can't, it's like thinking about death. Like, I can't think about the consequences of it for too long, or else I start getting really angsty and, like, my heart starts palpitating and I get clammy and nervous and I'm just like, oh, I thought about this way too long. I gotta stop
that.
Yeah,
I live in avoidance for a lot of things for that reason. We've talked about it on the podcast before, but yeah. Yeah, I feel you. Anyways, that's a way to open the show,
yeah,
Michael.
Yeah. I mean, it's
existential crisis, Michael. Fears of change and also fears of things staying the same when you have conflicting fears and phobias.
Which is, it's one of those, like, I mean, like, long story short, Liz and I decided we're going to move in together.
Well, congratulations.
So, yeah.
Right, I hope.
Yeah, yeah. I'm hoping it's for the better, but, you know, we'll be, it's one of those, it's a watershed moment. You know, me moving in basically means that we are either going to end in tragedy or we're going to be together forever. And
it's true.
It's sort of like, it's the ripcord moment. It's the moment, like, right before you jump out of the plane. I've never done it. I never will, but I'm using an analogy that I think would tie in. It's like that moment right before you jump out of the plane, you can still kind of back out and be like, nah, just landed. I don't really want to parachute out of this, you know? Like, I don't really want to commit. And I don't know. It's just, I'm jumping. I'm making the leap. And I'm just, I got big feelings about it.
I get it. Hey, man. I mean, I don't know. To me, sometimes, unless, and I don't know how to say this and not make it sound like you're the asshole here.
Go ahead.
No. Fine. But it's I don't think you would do it if you didn't want to, first off. Just me knowing you just as a person. But you're like me where you're just a coin flipper. Even if you know inherently something is for the best and you want to do it, you begin to question it because you're like, well, what if, and you play the what if game. Right. And it's not a knock on the other person to be like, to have fears. It's, I think you have a more of a healthy respect for it than anything of potential outcomes than you do anything else.
I hope so. That's what I'm trying to rationalize it in my head as, not that it's an irrational fear, because, you know, the seed of the problem, you know, fear of failure, fear of, you know, huge commitment, like, is there. But I'm trying to convince myself that I'm spiraling it way out more than it needs to be.
Yeah,
and so I'm trying my best to keep it contained.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, just for another thing, it's a lot, and not saying moving in is quite on this same tier, but, like, it's like marriage. Even if you know inherently, like, I don't want to be with anybody else.
Sure.
So the fear isn't, like, it's just, I love you and things the way they are right now. And so to even alter that, even if it is more than likely for the absolute better, it's like, yeah, but it's something different, you know? So I get it.
Like, can't we just go back to, like, low-key, close-term, non-committal girlfriend status? Like, that'd be dope.
Nah, buddy. Well, that's why we watch movies. So, anything else going on, man?
That's pretty much it, man. Just like I said, been plugging away and trying to live through existential crisis without setting my hair on fire.
You know what will help you with that, Michael?
What will help?
The intro to this lovely podcast, Kesta, Always Bright.
I'm going to go listen right now.
That's right. And for anybody else that might have some existential crisis, we are much like, Lucy was the one that was the psychiatrist in Charlie Brown?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I always mix up their names. But yeah, Lucy was, much like Lucy, you send us 5 cents and you can Venmo that. We'll set up a What You've Been Watching Venmo one of these days. But you could write certainly your psychological queries to whatyoubeenwatchingpodcast@gmail.com. We are also on Instagram @whatyoubeenwatching.
Yes, sir.
Where else can they find us, my brother?
They can find us online at facebook.com/DudleyBrosPodcast. Or, you know, we out there in the streets. I'm out there making illegal moonshine. You can't have none. It's just for me.
Y'all, I know, I can't wait for us to get this on video. Michael waits for me to almost come up with mine, and then he adds a wrinkle to his. Oh, I fuck up the timing almost every single time, but I got it that time. But yeah, the second part of that joke was, and I'm driving it.
That's right.
NASCAR, bitches.
NASCAR, bitch. Woo! Well, anyways, we have a very special episode of What You Been Watching. Do we want to dive in with any movies ahead of time? Anything you've been keeping up with? Or
Yeah, I just saw The Roast of Tom Brady.
I did too. We talked about that, I think. Yeah.
I think you had seen it at that point, but I hadn't. It's hysterical. I think Nikki Glaser crushed it. She's definitely the one to watch. I had hoped Burt Kreischer and Tom Segura were going to come a little bit stronger. Not that it was weak, but I just think that they were probably... Not that it was bad comedy, just they were definitely the weakest of the bunch, I think.
It was just tonally different, I think,
yeah,
with them.
Yeah.
They went for something different that nobody else was, and
don't think it landed as
well. Yeah,
as
I can agree with that. I can agree with that.
And then who was the other guy? He played for the Patriots.
Julian Edelman.
Yeah, Julian Edelman. I think, for not being a comic, I think he was probably the funniest one.
Yeah, I would say that for sure. Again, I think it's too long, but they work better edited. But
so yeah, it was fun. You know, I love watching rich, famous people get hoisted on their own petard.
Yeah, it is one of those things where a lot of the jokes land for those that are in the football, quote-unquote, world. Like, right. Knowing that how grumpy Bill Belichick is all the time, so for him to finally show another side of himself instead of just being like every win or loss, we're preparing for next Sunday, like, which if you're a member of the press, it's like, you know, we're here to do a job and we're actually here to help you.
Right.
You don't have to treat us like crap every single
help
Sunday.
Help us make you look good and garner interest in next week's game.
There's a reason we do this, you know. The fans do pay the bills and they do want to see this, right. But hey. So they were always very tight-lipped, so it was funny to see finally some people kind of open up a little bit about it and kind of not be the quote-unquote Patriot way, which cheating, obviously.
Cheating and bending the rules.
I wish somebody, the joke that I wish I would have heard somebody say is that, like, you built your dynasty with anyone. Okay, quick football talk. You play, there's four teams in a division, and if you win your division, you automatically go to the playoffs. And the entire time that the Patriots were kicking ass and taking names, the division, all the other three teams, pardon my French, they fucking sucked. So they built their dynasty on the corpses of bad franchises that they have to play six times a year and cheating. They just did, man. I'm sorry. Play the Bills, Buffalo Bills, who were bad at the time, the Jets, who were consistently terrible, and the Miami Dolphins, who... Love you, Caleb. Love you, Godfather. But they sucked for that entire run. Yeah. Doesn't hurt
your
call.
We're going 79, huh?
Yeah. Sure.
8-0.
Yeah, whatever it is.
When we only had four teams in the league.
Yeah, we played a bunch of plumbers. Anyways. But anything else you've been watching, though? Because we got...
I did see something kind of interesting I want to talk about. Saw the Iron Claw recently.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I kind of want to watch that, man.
I'll tell you what, it's really, really well done, but you do kind of have to know the story of the Von Erich family beforehand. For any of you who might not know what we're talking about, the Iron Claw is basically the story of the Von Erich family. It's this wrestling, you know, this legendary wrestling family from out in, I think, like, way west Texas or something like that.
I would guess Texas.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely Texas. And basically... They all sort of, it's this group of four brothers, there was actually five, and they all have this sort of meteoric rise in wrestling, and then slowly, one by one, tragedy befalls them, and, you know, suicides and drug problems, and one of the kids, you know, loses a foot, you know, like, just one setback after another, and sort of the perspective of them all trying to stay united throughout this, you know, this thing that bonds them called wrestling, so...
I'm actually have become more and more of a fan of Zac Efron. Mm-hmm. I think he's actually really talented. And I mean, I forget which one he was in, High School Musical, right?
I think so.
I was way too old for that one when it came out. But and shout out to him. I know he's had his own struggles too, and with stuff like that too. And apparently, he's come out the other side in terms of addictions and things like that. And I think anytime you're just young in Hollywood, it's a coin flip, man.
Yeah.
Probably less than that. But anyways. But I also, what's the guy that's in The Bear that's in that movie?
Jeremy Allen White.
I like that guy too.
Yeah, he's of the, Zac Efron plays, I want to say the second eldest, Kevin Von Erich. And then Jeremy Allen White plays, I want to say the third middle kid. His name is Cary Von Erich. I think, to be fair, I think Jeremy Allen White does a little bit better job than Zac Efron. Zac Efron's a little bit wooden, but kind of so is Kevin Von Erich. So I don't know if it's just art imitating life or they just happen to cast the right guy for that.
Yeah, he might have crushed it. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it might be the acting job of his life, but he just comes across as very, like, not monotone, but just kind of wooden and a little bit stiff, robotic, you know, like.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's. Without seeing the movie, I mean, it sounds like you're at least descriptive.
Yeah, on it, so. At least Jeremy Allen White, I feel like, has a little bit more zest, a little bit more personality in the character. But yeah, it's a heartbreaking movie. It does.
Zach Galifianakis plays the youngest, right?
That's right. No. I would watch that movie, actually.
I like him, actually,
a lot. Just shirtless running around giving people the Iron Claw. Yeah. That'd be great.
I like Zach Galifianakis as an actor.
Yeah, I... It moves a little bit fast in terms of, you know, like I said, there's a scene where Cary Von Erich loses his foot in a motorcycle accident. But they don't actually connect that thread for you. They just, they say, he has a line like, oh, I'm going to go for a ride. And then they hard cut to, like, next scene as he's getting out of bed and he gets the crutches off and they, you know, film him from the waist up. And then finally when he goes to the refrigerator, they do the full body shot and you can see that he's been amputated, you know, right below the knee, basically.
Ah.
So they don't really connect the dots for you, but if you know the story, then you know, like, oh, we're at this part now.
See, that's a fine line to walk, and I don't often...
Because Cary couldn't.
Well played.
Although, no, strangely enough, he actually had a very successful wrestling career. A lot of people didn't know about the accident because he wore really tall boots and had a prosthetic underneath for pretty much the rest of his wrestling career.
Oh, shout out to him. Way to overcome. But I was going to say, though, it's a fine line to walk to. There is a certain point where if you spoon feed your audience too much, of like, right. Then we have to have a huge reaction shot of Zac Efron crying over the lost foot. It's like, we get it. And then sometimes they don't clue you in enough and they go, okay, well, our audience is smart enough to pick this up. But for those that don't in the know, I guess... If the focus is not the events, but if the focus of the movie is the family, which is what it sounds like,
yes,
then that's a smart move. But if you're trying to retail like the events, then it's like that's pretty pivotal, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Know? I mean, even more to the point, like I said, in the movie there's four brothers. In reality, there was actually five. They kind of blended two of them together.
Really?
Yeah. So they, which I kind of get for time wise because it is just one more tragedy. Like. Spoiler alert, not many of these boys come out of this alive, unfortunately. Yeah,
it's a Requiem for a Wrestling Dream.
Pretty much. Hey, there you go. That's right.
I'm telling you, call us. We'll sell your movie pitch.
There you go.
By the way, patent pending.
Write that down. Patent pending. Yeah, so it's in terms of being historically accurate, it hits the keynotes. You know, maybe some of the details are a little bit fuzzy, a little bit fudged, but again, it focuses on the tragedies that befall this family and just sort of their desire and drive to all stay unified. And yet the very thing that they love is the very thing that's fucking killing them.
Yeah. Yeah. Damn. That's I definitely want to see it. Definitely want to see that one. That was very well summarized, sir.
Well, thank you, sir.
Yeah. No, I want to check that one out. I figured I'm surprised it took you this long to see it, but it's magic what happens when things come to streaming. You're like, hey,
there you go. Yeah. It was one of those that was on my list to go see in theaters, but just unfortunately it didn't. It was only in theaters for, I want to say, like 2 or 3 weeks, and then it was gone.
Yeah, some of those movies, especially with the A24 stuff, which, shout out to A24, you guys are getting some real heat, man. Like, Civil War was their highest grossing film ever. Still haven't seen that, still want to, though.
I could just, that's the one with, what's her name? Mary Jane, fucking...
Dolphin Teeth. P. Diddy Dolphin Teeth. Teeth. P. Diddy
Teeth. What's her name? Kirsten Dunst.
Yes.
Yes.
So that was mean. Shout out to Kirsten Dunst. You played a good Mary Jane, I guess.
That's right. Even if you do have little baby frog teeth.
You do got little dolphin teeth, though. It's all right. It's a lot of gums happening. All right, I'm going to stop making fun of people. That's not right. That's not right. She's a talented actress. Anyways, usually Michael, that's your role. And I took it from you, so sorry about that.
Slot. That's all right.
Anything else you've been watching, though?
No, that's pretty much it. I'm going to give, let's see, what should I rate Iron Claw? I'm going to give it, the Magna Claw.
There you go. There you go. Fairly favorable.
I like it. You know, it's painful, but it's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess I'll tell you what I'm, just for the sake of the show's continuity, I'll tell you something. I think you watched, well, I'll do three, but two of them I've already talked about several times.
You lost me on the math.
I know, right? I'm going to talk three movies real quick. Two of them we've definitely spoken on the show before. I watched Dune 2 again.
Ah.
I actually really like it, man.
I still have not seen it. I have not been able to commit to it.
It makes me like the first one more.
Okay.
And I don't mind a slow burn, honestly, so I didn't bump up to Dune as much as I thought I would, but like I like the first one more because of the second one.
Yeah, the first one just... It's beautifully shot, don't get me wrong. Like, it's cinematically, it's wonderful to watch, but just, it didn't really hit me. A lot of it was just, like, legends of stuff that had already happened. Like, I am from House Atreides, and we fought at the Battle of Gondor, and then we saved the Melonians from the Epithyrians, and they were entrusted into our can. It's like, all right, fucking, shoot a laser, please.
Yeah, right. No, it is a lot of that. It's a lot of political... espionage, right, and assassination attempts. And I'll tell you what helped me, though, is watching a 30-minute YouTube ahead of time and being like, everything you need to know about Dune in 30 minutes. And then it dove into the books, and it pretty much explained the first movie after I watched it. And then it said, in the books, it's this. And then they had somebody pop up that was like, but it's not in the movies, so you don't need to worry about it.
Right.
You can fast forward to when he's off. And it was only 30 minutes of my time, and it was like, then I watched it again, knowing what I knew then about it, appreciated it more. And then when 2 came out, I was like, ah! Here we are. This is what I'm talking about. Here's the lasery McLaser stuff. And it taught me that it's weird that Dune is getting referenced to, like, oh, he's Obi-Wan, or oh, he's this, or like all those messianic kind of figures.
Sure.
When really those things, a lot of them are pulling from Dune.
Oh, yeah.
Right, it's right, like, I didn't realize. It kind of should have stricken first with that one. So. But I don't know. I think Denis Villeneuve is... on his way to being one of the best sci-fi directors of all time.
I could buy that.
He's on his way, certainly. I mean, he's got tough competition with Ridley Scott and a couple other people.
My fear is that I fear he might go the Chris Nolan way, where he gets too into himself, or he is constantly trying to outwit or outsmart the audience, as opposed to just telling the story that needs to be told. Like...
We'll see.
You see what I'm saying?
Like, I don't think he's there. Yeah, I think the fact he pulled off Arrival the way he did was... That one, it's still... That's supposed to be a confusing movie, mm-hmm. but he stuck the landing on that one, so that's pretty high concept.
There's a few areas I rub up against it, but it's Michael. Not... No.
I gotta get in the
It's a great movie.
Okay. Let's not bury the lead here. Anyway, so Dune 2, still dug that. I will give it the bottom half of the planet Arrakis with the storms. The other movie I saw, which I just finished today, I rewatched in preparation for Furiosa. I rewatched Mad Max Fury Road.
Okay.
I watched that movie way too many times drunk initially, because there were things that I feel like I saw for the first time. For the very first time when I just saw it.
To be fair, I still watch that movie drunk a lot, and there's still stuff that I noticed for the first time. So I think that maybe just George Miller is that brilliant of a director to where he just fires so many... cool images at you that your brain doesn't even have time to process them all at once.
Well, I meant in terms of just basic plot stuff.
The plot that might be a drinking thing.
The plot is, well, I think what it was is I didn't care about anything else. I was like, oh, they drive somewhere, they turn around, they drive back.
Sure.
Which to me, I like movies that it's a simple script in terms of, it's like The Raid. We come in at floor one, we got to get to floor three. Everything else that happens in between is, it's like they develop subplots in the meantime, but like, ultimately, that's what Mad Max is, too. It's like, we're driving somewhere, then we're driving back. It's like, okay. But I didn't realize, like, the whole, like, the worshipping of the V8 engine thing,
mm-hmm.
way over my head. I thought that they were just weird dudes that were like, I shall see you in Chrome Valley. I thought it was just some weird shit that they said.
Sure.
turns out it's like a whole religious thing, and like I didn't get the whole War Boys thing at all. Again, I think I was just really drunk, and then when I did watch it, I just didn't care because I was like, oh yeah, I just like the action sequences.
Well, yeah, I mean, he
basically, I thought I grasped everything, so I just was like, oh, this is just background stuff.
Yeah, just surface level stuff. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. But, I mean, they based Immortan Joe on like the African warlords and like Kony and stuff like that, so it's very similar. The whole structure is, we bring them in young, like very young children, and we raise them up to be soldiers so that by the time they're actually out on the battlefield, they're, you know, completely brainwashed cultists who will, you know, believe that their general is their god and he's going to reward them. You know, all they got to do is just die gloriously in battle and
yeah,
they're going to be rewarded, you know, whatever.
Yeah, like the whole witness me thing, I forgot all about that.
Oh, yeah.
How, and like, if Immortan Joe will watch you die, then that's like you get to ride in a Chrome Ball Hall. And then when he rides away, mediocre! You
know, right?
I forgot all about that. That's what shattered. It's like a major plot point for Brandon Holt's character, who I like as an actor also.
Is Brandon Holt?
I think so. He played Beast in
Lucas Holt?
No. I don't know. Clayton Holt? Some white boy? who I like as an actor as well. But yeah, I dug that movie. That movie rocks, man. That's like one of the best action films of all time.
So. Nicholas Holt, that's it.
Did I say Brandon Holt?
It's Nicholas Holt.
It is, see? Out here slipping. Still not getting stuff about Mad Men. Further proving my point. And I think Tom Hardy must say 8 words in that whole movie.
Oh, yeah. It's all grunts and like, you. Hey,
yeah, it's a dope movie, though. The other movie I watched just real quick is Madame Web.
Oh, Lord.
Did you see it too? Or?
I have not. I try not to base my viewing experiences on, you know, like, not necessarily reviews, but like, just because a movie gets bad press, I try to not buy into the hype of that it might, you know, that it's really bad. But this one is getting so much bad hype that I think there might be something to it.
It's...
You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those, like, if 2 people call you an asshole, well, fuck them. But if 100 people call you an asshole, maybe you're an asshole.
Right, right. No, I get that. And unfortunately, the anti-hype of this movie has also gotten legs of its own via social media.
Spider legs.
8 of them. Yeah. I'll say this. It's I don't think it's a good movie. It's poorly shot. It's this camera, they cut every... I think the longest cut they have is like 8 seconds. It's like every 2-3 seconds.
Really?
Yeah, it's a lot.
That's intense.
Yeah, like the bad guy's motives are just completely one note. It's like, oh, these girls are going to kill me one day, so I'm going to go kill them first. That's it. There's no other wrinkle to what his motivation is.
Right, so why are they trying to kill him?
They don't ever really explain. He sees it in his dreams.
Kind of necessary.
Yeah, no, it's just in his dreams, and he's seen it. And so it's like, okay.
All right. Yeah,
and... You see the girls in the spider suit once in the beginning in one of his dreams and once at the end in his dream and at once at the very end, and it's like that's it, and they don't really do anything. They hang upside down and strike a couple cool poses, and that's it, man. It's other than that, it's just
anything to get Sydney Sweeney in a skin tight leotard, I guess.
And this was like one of her earlier movies, and I don't really know what she was in that romantic comedy that just really hit.
But you.
Yeah.
I mean, she's mostly known for doing Euphoria on HBO.
Oh, that's right.
Being naked.
Oh, that's right.
Quite frankly, I mean, I'm not trying to minimize her career or anything. I mean, she
may be brilliant.
She has more movie credits than I do, but she's primarily known for being naked.
Yeah, I know. Like, she's the hot ticket right now for sure in terms of, you know, what people are jumping on. But it's, producers are jumping on. Let me rephrase that. But no, it's
looking
it's,
at you, Harvey Weinstein.
Oh man. Dakota Johnson is just ultimately the whole premise of the movie is she gets a premonition, she stops the girls from being teenagers, and then they go do something else. And then like the spider guy, the bad guy, pursues them for a little bit, and she's like, oh, I had a vision where he kills all of us. Let's not do that. And then she eventually makes peace with the past, and then she can see all the future, and it's like, so says the time spider. Which is just, I don't know, it's just flat. Like, the whole movie is just like, and then roll credits.
It sounds like, right. Did you ever see that Nick Cage movie, Knowing?
No.
It's very similar. Like, basically this dude has the ability to look into the future, but only like 2 to 3 minutes.
Yeah.
So, like, there's a scene where he's going to pick up Jessica Biel at a diner and stuff like that, and he sees all the different ways he can approach her, And so, like, it's just him film. Basically, it's Nick Cage filming the same scene over and over and over again, but slightly different.
Yeah. There's no action in this movie. Like, nobody, they just run. And they're like, oh, run this way. And then it's like, you guys stay in the woods where the time, where the spider can't see you because he's got a lot of money and resources. And this is in the, I think it's in the 90s or the early 2000s when it takes place.
I don't know.
So he's like, oh, he has cutting edge technology, which is everywhere nowadays. So shout out to them. So stay in the woods. And they're like, we're going to walk over to that diner real quick. And then it's like, oh, I got to use my time spider sense to. And like at the end, ultimately, it just doesn't work because Madame Web is nor. She's one of those characters that, and Peter Parker has said this before, and it's, I'm going to paraphrase, but ultimately, every time you show up, it's either going to be something, it's usually something terrible for me.
Right.
You're just kind of an annoyance. Like, you don't really do anything. You don't help me. You don't hinder me. You're just like, beware of this, and it's all a bunch of cryptic crap. And that's typically what it is. And she doesn't even get the suit, which is really bad, until the very end of the movie. She falls into the water and loses her eyesight, and then all of a sudden is Charles Xavier at that point because she's crippled. Like, they just glossed right over that one. So it's just flat. Like, and I don't think it's as bad as everybody maybe makes it out to be. You may find it to be that way. It's just entirely forgettable. It's just which is to me one of the worst things.
Yeah, we've talked about that. Like, it's okay to be a bad movie, but you gotta be so bad that like. People have to talk about it, like The Room or like, you know, like the first, maybe not the first Friday the 13th, but you know what I'm saying? Like just, it's...
Yeah, I got you.
Holy shit. Or like Battlefield Earth or something like that, where it's just like, holy shit, can you believe that they put $80 million into that 3-hour piece of dog crap?
The one thing I do like, and I hope they continue this thread, is...
The Spider thread.
See what I did there? Is they have, he's, if he's not on the Whatcha Been Watchin' Hall of Fame, he certainly is working his way up the rungs. Krampus's own, stepbrother's own, Adam Scott.
Oh, really?
Plays Uncle Ben.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I would like to see them take that aspect and continue that, because I like him.
Okay.
Yeah.
The adventures of young Peter Parker and Uncle Ben?
Yeah, I just like him as an actor. When they cast him, I was like, well done. Also, little Mike Epps cameo in there, who I think is a very silly man.
There you go. There you go. I like Mike Epps.
He does silly things for a little bit, talks a little ish, and then gets out of there. So. But yeah, while she comes to term with her trying to save everyone via her time spider senses.
And so what? It's basically all about she is somehow inherited these powers, and now she's...
Her mom got... Spoiler. The bad guy... Uh-huh. Killed Dakota Fanning's...
Not Dakota Fanning. Dakota Johnson.
Dakota Johnson, sorry. Killed... Yeah, that's the second time I've done it. Let's just check that bingo card.
Welcome to the What You've Been Watching podcast.
No, ultimately, the bad guy kills Dakota Johnson's mom on the quest for some mythical spider in Peru.
Okay.
And then, in order to save... The mom was with child at the time, and so in order for the child to be born, she had to get bit by the mythical spider, too. And that's what gave her spider powers.
Oh, Jesus Christ on a cracker.
And that's the same bad guy at the end that's like, I'm having these dreams about these three random teenagers killing me, so we're going to just squash that real quick. And he apparently has spider powers, too. And that's about it, though. Everything else is just her avoiding stuff. Like, don't go in that room over there. And they're like, you don't know nothing. One of them's like, white lady. And it's like, all right, go in that room then. Oh, we should have listened to the white lady. And she has to explain like 8 different times, hey, I can kind of see the future. She throws a piece of paper at her. It hits her. Oh, yeah? Like, it doesn't work like that. They don't ever really explain.
Right. Well, how does it work then? Like,
so, anyways, I will give it 1 Adam Scott saving performance.
I don't know. That might be too favorable of praise for this movie.
One
Adam Scott
saving performance. He's not in it enough.
Needed more Adam Scott.
Needed more Adam notes. Needs more Adam Scott. Cool. With that note, we have a very special episode. That was just the particular of the how we can call it a Watchmen watching episode without at least doing some simple formalities. We have a very hot, fresh episode of the Whatcha Been Watching mailbag coming at you right now. So as we open up phones and crinkle our papers,
that's right.
We're going to, you can hear us.
That's notes. That's letters.
Digging
actual
deep.
Actual letters.
Yeah, actual letters. And so we are going to dig deep into the bag here, and we're going to fire up some Whatcha Been Watching questions.
Mailbag.
Well done, sir. Cha-cha-cha. Every single time. Well done.
And just as a reminder, you too can submit your listener mailbag questions at whatcha been watching podcast at gmail.com. Post them on facebook.com/Dudley Bros Podcast, or, you know, send us a carrier pigeon. I don't know. We'll get that shit.
Slide in them DMs, as they say. Anyway, a big shout out to our first question. Comes from Ashley. Thank you for all the support you show.
That's right.
You did write us in on the email. I did assure you that we would get to it. Sorry it has been a delay. We had to rack enough questions in order. They're not coming in hot like they used to. So we had to wait till we could empty the clip a little bit. But I appreciate genuinely from both of us on behalf of M. Duddy's over there. Thank you so much for all the love and support.
One of the true OG Legionnaires.
She's working her way to be Queen of the Legion. Y'all better pay attention. So, anyways.
She's going to be our Penny Lane, bro.
That's what's up. Hey, I'm with it. Okay. Hello, Dudley Bros, and happy holidays. Back at you.
That's right.
I told you it's been a while. She asked, have we seen Thanksgiving yet? And if so, what are your thoughts? That was the first question. Which... we watch Thanksgiving just for you.
That's right. That's our dedication to you.
Yes. So what did you think?
I actually really liked it. I thought it was really campy. I love a good, you know, schlocky horror movie, and this was definitely that. It's sort of I Know What You Did Last Summer meets Thanksgiving, I guess. So, yeah, killer strikes back 1 year after tragedy and basically... dispatches with people using Thanksgiving implements, you know, like the meat cleaver and the turkey baster and electric saw.
Yeah, it gets pretty graphic.
Ends up roasting a chicken in an oven. It's pretty dope.
Yeah. I was a little reluctant at first, given it was Eli Roth. And sometimes he just goes for gross out.
Well, he did The Hostel.
Oh, he did Hostel and The Green. What was that one where he was about Green the cannibals? Mile? No. It was about the cannibals, and that was pretty graphic as well. I forget what it's called. It's Green something.
Right.
But yeah, so I was a little reluctant when I saw it was him. But if he stays in this lane where it is very gory, but it's over the top to the point where, like, I dug it. I thought he was perfect for this one. It was, did not take itself so seriously in the kill category where it was like, we're going to show. And what they did show was, again, it was kind of cartoony and over the top enough where it was like, you can kind of give props to the creativity of it all. Even though, like, I watched somebody get baked in an oven, you didn't see the whole thing, but
it's, yeah you see enough of the,
it's effed up, you know, it's like
yeah but it's not as, I hate to say highbrow because it's not, but it's not as visceral and gory as like The Saw or The Hostel or something like that, but it's definitely not the same level of cheese and camp as, say, like one of the Friday the 13th movies or something like that. It kind of walks the fine line between being both. Like, the violence is very over the top, and it's so over the top that it's almost comical, like the amount of blood being sprayed out and stuff like that. That being said, when they, you know, show entrails or they show wounds or something like that, it is very graphic and it's very well done special effects, you know, so there is that aspect to it. It's not like it's pulling the punches on that, but it is sort of tempering out the spiciness of it all by being so over the top and graphic.
It also goes for some, like, there's a scene where one of the victims is jumping on a trampoline and magically John Carver, the bad guy, just appears underneath with a knife, and just, like, as she's bouncing on the, and it, to me, it was just like she's doing the whole, like, ooh, look at these, like the cheerleader outfit, showing her butt and stuff. So it's like kind of a wink at the classic slashers in a lot of ways.
Right. Oh, of course.
And so I could kind of separate myself from the gore, which I've mentioned a million times. I don't mind a gory movie, but it's not something I'm going to revisit. You know, I'm a bit squeamish, a little timid, as they say. But this one, I would actually watch a sequel, even. I kind of dug it.
I think they might be coming with a second one, actually. Yeah. So spoiler alert, they end on a real cliffhanger. Did he die in the fire? We don't know.
We don't know. But no, so I dug it. I would give it the carving of the roast beast.
Oh, I was going to give it, and shout out to Liz for helping me think of this one. It was really her idea, but I'm going to take half credit.
Patent pending.
Thank you to Liz for helping me think of this. It is one well-roasted stepmom with all the trimmings.
Well done. Well done.
Yeah.
Also, real quick, we're not supposed to go back after review it. I do like the genuine, like, the attempts to escape. Sometimes it's like, just run. And the person that did finally get their chance to escape while captive genuinely was like, I'm trying to get the hell up out of here.
Exactly.
It wasn't like, oh, no. Like, she would hide to kind of get her bearings, but then it was like, she was trying to make it out of this thing until you get pitchforked in the back. So, I don't know. I gotta appreciate that, though. I always get tired of watching it. Like, get out of here. You would scramble like your life depends on it. But, you know, anyways, but...
When she got pitchforked in the back, did that make you, like, reminisce about Fuzzy Lumpkin?
A little bit. A little bit. Shout out to the Powerpuff Girls on that one.
All right. Miss Ashley's second question. Have you heard of the graphic novel, Did You Hear What Ed Gein Done? I actually have. I have not had a chance to read it.
Likewise. Likewise.
I'm looking forward to it, actually. If you haven't, knowing the premise of the serial killer Ed Gein... Who do you think should make it as a miniseries or film? Is she asking for director or production company?
I don't know what kind of podcast she thinks you run here.
Let me think. I mean, I definitely think it could be made as a film or a miniseries. I mean, I don't know. I can't think of any one particular director that I would like to attach to it. I mean, maybe... trying to think of who would do a good that to me seems almost like a, I don't know, maybe a Quentin Tarantino version of that. I could see that, you know, just making it grotesquely violent and over the top.
I'll say this without me reading the actual graphic novel. I can't really say on who should do it, but the answer of should it be a miniseries or a film, I typically lean more towards episodic stuff, especially limited series. If there's a especially when it comes to comic books, I just think it translates really well in the terms of, like, we know where one issue ends, where that the cliffhanger is, because you gotta wait. I think it just translates better. Typically for a movie, it depends if I'm taking an overall story arc that came out of like Infinity War would be kind of a pain to do as a miniseries. It's like, let's get to the snap.
Sure, right, exactly.
But for something like that, I typically think episodic things would work better. So I would probably say.
See, maybe that's where we're different, because I'm thinking of Ed Gein, Ed Gein the movie, whereas maybe you're thinking more a shot-for-shot remake of the comic book, you know? So I think maybe that might... I think in that sense, you're right. If they're going to do strictly as it's shown in the comic book, a miniseries would probably be better. In terms of doing an overall Ed Gein story, maybe a two-hour movie would be better.
Yeah, potentially. And if I were to pick somebody, he really changed my opinion of, I thought the Watchmen TV show on HBO was brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
So Damon Lindelof or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah, I know he did Lost and he gets a lot of crap for that, but I thought Watchmen was brilliant. And if he can bring some of that flavor to any comic book that he wants to do,
I can see that.
That would be my first, maybe, again, without reading it. So
yeah, maybe, I think for me, it might be maybe Frank Darabont might be a good one.
J.J. Abrams is always the qualifying.
Sure, I mean, why not? Yeah, just give J.J. Abrams more work. Right. Why not? Right. He deserves it.
Also, who do you think should play Ed Gein? I'm going to go with the what you've been watching staples here.
Okay.
If Christoph Waltz can pull off an accent, then let's go him, because he's terrifying and everything.
I can buy that.
I would say the great what you've been watching Wall of Famer, Walton Goggins.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah, I don't know that he looks like Ed Gein, though.
He can do whatever
he
wants.
He can probably do it. Yeah.
He's the man. And my final dipping of the well would be Sammy Rockwell. Because he can do anything.
There has to be a dance sequence. There has to be a scene where Ed Gein's dancing around wearing some dude's face as a mask.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So that's my...
Running butt naked through the woods, beating on a fucking tambourine or something.
Sure. Hey, I'm with it. Like I said, if anyone can do it, it's Sammy Rockwell. So that's a kind of a go-to-the-well answer, but I also do stand by those.
Let me see. If I could pick somebody to play Ed Gein, idealistically, it would be like a young Tommy Lee Jones. Ooh. Or like a young Jack Nicholson. Just somebody who's really got that under-the-surface tension boiling in their performance, and you're just waiting for it to blow the whole time. Ben Foster in Prosthetics, yeah, I think, is always a good call. But I think, and this is just my personal opinion, I think if we're going to do fantasy casting, bring in the late, great Ernest P. Worrell, a.k.a.
Oh.
Jim Varney, in what might be his titanic turn into dramatic acting.
He's one of the whatcha-been-watching Wall of Famers of Wall of Famers.
Like, even if he was just doing a caricature of Ed Gein the whole movie, you know, like just playing a character.
I'd see that in a second. I'd see that in a second. Yeah, no, great answer.
Yeah, Jim Varney, I think, yeah.
One more question. More importantly, who should play his mother? I am going to go Liz Banks, because I think she can do anything, and I like seeing her as Rita Repulsor. And she actually did a good job in the movie Bright of playing a very overprotecting, super loving mother that kind of let her terrible son do terrible things.
Right.
So I could see more of that. Dallas Bryce Howard played a mom in the movie Rocket Man. She played Elton John's mom. And she
Was,
yeah, she was, I didn't even recognize her like at all. So I thought she was really great in that. Frances Normand obviously can do anything. And, What's the in Fargo?
Francis McDormand.
Francis Normand. I don't know. I knew what I was trying to say.
That's right.
And there's also one actress. If she can do an accent, that's not going to butcher it. Play on words there.
Hey.
Hannah Waddington plays the CEO and the president of... she's in Ted Lasso. She plays the owner of the team.
Okay.
And she was also...
I think you've talked about her before.
Yeah, she just has a really unique face. Like, she has such an expressive smile, like a smile that just goes all the way up to her eyes, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think if she can do an accent, that would be fun to see. She's very, very, very British, though.
So she would have to pull off the accent.
Yeah, but she has such an expressive face, though. It's like almost like a much prettier version, no disrespect, of like as expressive as, golly, what's his name? Willem Dafoe.
So okay.
Kind of one of those faces. It's like just unique, but she's still very pretty, and so, I don't know.
Okay.
I think that'd be fun to do, though.
I only have one answer for that, and it's going to be my always go-to, Margot Martindale. Always. Margot Martindale as Ed Gein's mom.
That's never a bad answer.
I'm just saying. Show me one thing where she's been bad, you know?
You can't.
She's amazing.
There's no point in this.
Go ahead, do the research. We'll wait.
You go waste your time.
You back? You seen everything Margot Martindale has done? It was awesome, wasn't it?
Just good and everything. Man, all right. So we're going to keep going. Got a couple more from Ashley. We're going to dedicate some time because she dedicated some time to us.
That's right. We salute you, Miss Ashley.
We truly
do. One of the loyal legions.
All right. Discuss the importance of Ed Gein's influence on the slasher era in regards to films by Alfred Hitchcock, as well as The Silence of the Lambs, Buffalo Bill's character, etc. I'll tell you this. I think...
I don't know what kind of podcast you think we're running, but that's not what we do here. We are here for news, speculation, and silliness, madam.
Yeah.
You take that shit to someone who cares, how did this get made?
Real cinephiles.
That's right.
We're just two dum-dums with a microphone that happen to watch. Don't watch more movies than other people, by the way. Just like talking about movies that they've watched more than other people.
Moving on.
Yeah, no, I'll say this, though. I did watch a behind-the-scenes, it was a DVD feature, when they re-released, or I guess remade, Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Mm-hmm.
The one with Jessica Biel, speaking of which.
Sure.
They had something on Ed Gein, and they pulled that character, that iteration of Leatherface and the family from Ed Gein and things of that.
Sure.
And so I think the statement of what he's done for horror in general... It actually, the legacy of what he did is not even, it's larger than what actually happened. And what he did was absolutely horrific.
Sure, sure.
They made it sound like there was, body in jars and stuff. And it was like, no, there was random teeth here and this and that and the third. It wasn't as, it was still a madhouse, but it wasn't quite what the legend became. And so I think more has spun out of the legend than I think the actual axe. But a lot of these horror slashes.
Axe, A-X-E?
I'll let you decide.
So what you're saying is Ed Gein is innocent. Free Ed Gein.
It's not what I'm saying at all. I'm just saying the legend of him. That's the
stance you're taking?
But I think like Devil's Rejects owes a lot to Ed Gein and stuff like that. Yeah. It's really hard to escape the influence of it all. Especially just like I said, the story itself. So.
Well, and especially, I mean, if you think about it historically, Ed Gein was coming out in a time when mass communication was finally sort of reaching a coast-to-coast level. Like, you might have had local radio stations, local TV stations, but this was really at a point where you could watch something that was filmed in New York in San Francisco, and sort of news was traveling at a much more rapid rate than had ever been recorded in human history. And so then you take this sensational story, which we all know that the media, you know, they have the phrase, if it bleeds, it leads. So all they want to do is just report on the travesties and the big, you know, attention grabbing stories. And this probably came at the perfect juxtaposition of news media and, you know, obsession with serial killers and well, you know, you're not safe in the cities because there's too many murders. And then here's this, you know, country bumpkin, you know, living on 100-acre woods and just building a, you know, wooded nightmare palace.
Right.
You know, so it's this really sensational story that really caught on. So I think historically you have to look at it from that aspect in terms of maybe not the first serial killer to ever gain notoriety, but definitely came at the right time at the right place.
The depravity of just like the body parts and stuff like that being made into like lamps and stuff, like that was the part that was like, what is he doing? What? Because right. I mean, even Jack the Ripper, it's like, oh, he's
all he did was murder people.
Yeah, he killed prostitutes and like, I'm not saying anything negative about anybody in the sex working field, but like it was like, oh, you in the, I don't know. It didn't seem like by then it was like the story kind of traveled around London. And then like, again, the legend grew to be like, Jack the Ripper was murdering innocents in the night and lock your homes and da 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 da. Right. And it's like, it became something it wasn't even, but like nobody had seen this kind of depravity on top of like a news station, like Michael was saying. Mm-hmm. So anyways, yeah. Yeah. So Ed Gein and the impact on films. This is the like deepest dive we've ever done. Something.
I'm tired
now. Final question, then we'll take a quick break. She wants to know, lastly, in light of the recent casting events, and this was written back in probably the holidays, I'm going to say.
Okay.
What the F should they do with the Scream franchise now?
With the Scream franchise?
Yeah. Keep making them.
Yeah. I mean, turn it into the new Friday the 13th or Nightmare on Elm Street. Do 1,000 of them, reboot it 100 times. Who cares? It, like, Scream has effectively worked its way into the horror lexicon. Like, it's one of those movies that, just like Friday the 13th, just like Nightmare on Elm Street, just like Halloween, just like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, was a definitive horror movie for an entire generation growing up. And that's, it's, at this point, has wormed itself into the universe of, now it's not necessarily public domain, but it's grown so big that
it's in the zeitgeist.
Right. Everybody sort of has a Scream reference.
Agreed. I think it's also, they seem to be doing a pretty good job with like Jenna Ortega and stuff. But it's like when the rock band Kiss took the makeup off, they're like, okay, the well has run dry on Courtney Cox and David Arquette and Neve Campbell. So we're going to move on from them.
Right.
And then like, what's the smartest thing that Kiss ever did? They put the makeup back on.
Right back
and that's,
on.
And that's what Scream's going to be to me. It's like
one more tour.
Yeah. With Neve Campbell coming back. And then, oh, it's so you can
we're bringing back Matthew Lillard like that. You like him?
I do like that one. So, well, on that note, thank you very much for the questions. We're going to keep them coming, but we're going to take a break real fast. And, from our sponsor Maps. You probably never learned to read them, and you definitely never learned how to fold them. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
are back from our sponsor, Maps. Just Google that shit.
Always.
Literally, Google Maps.
All right, let's rustle deeper into this mailbag. What you got for us, brother?
Let's see. Let me do my research here. Let's see. What role would you like to have on a TV movie set? Or what role do you think the other brother would be best at?
Oh.
Okay. So what role would I like to have on a TV? The role that I would like to have, I would like to be a director. I don't think I can do that because I have a very difficult time making hard decisions.
Surprise you. Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to save that. I think the one I would like to do, one of my dream jobs, I think, would be a cinematographer.
Okay.
Just in terms of a lot of times, I know directors have ideas for a shot, and then a lot of times the cinematographer is the person that sets the colors and the tones and the background, and they're like, all right, I have this great idea for a shot. Now, how do we do it? And
sure,
that's what a lot of times that...
The director goes like, here's what I want to see, and the cinematographer has to figure out like, okay, how do we make that happen?
Right, right. So that would be a skill set I would love to have.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of what I mean, I would go writer for you. I don't think you give yourself enough credit for your writing.
Aw.
Yeah, so I would say writer for you, or, and this is no disrespect, I know you're really good at it, foods and craft services, man. That's not a knock. I mean, those people work very hard, and it's a very important job. So
there's been a lot of lucrative careers that have been built off of being the craft services guy, and then some actor's like, hey, I like the way you do those ribs. You want to be my personal chef? Like,
yeah.
Sure do. Yep.
Yeah. And just being in a hospital, yeah. So that would be something, I think. I mean, again, no disrespect to the... I've been those people, so...
Right, right. I could see that, yeah. That would be something I could get into. I think for you, you could definitely be a director in terms of...
Hmm.
Hard decisions in terms of, no, we're getting this shot by 7 p.m. because that's going to be the perfect light. Even transitioning a little bit maybe into producer in terms of, again, like the director gives you, okay, here's what I want to do. I want to shoot at this location. And then your job, you're very good at figuring out the how-to of it all in terms of like, all right, here's my mission. Now, how do I make that work? You know,
I can tell you actually what I would like.
So I think a producer, you would
appreciate
do very well.
That.
Yeah. Or even like a location scout or something
like
that.
Damn dream job.
Yeah,
they're gonna have to send me other places. I haven't found it yet. I would probably be realistic. I would probably be Bill Hader's character in Tropic Thunder. Just a yes man. You spank that ass less. I'd be the best hype man there is. So. Anyways,
I can see you as a hype man.
I'm the best at being the guy behind the guy.
That's right.
I'm king of it.
Now go get drunk, take all the credit.
Exactly.
No, seriously. A nutless monkey could do your job.
Good line. All right. We're going to dig deeper into our mailbag. Oh, this one is applicable. As we were talking about some wrestling earlier.
Oh.
Okay. This is fun. What is one aspect of professional wrestling that you wish other companies would incorporate into their business? I got mine.
Wait, hold on. Wait, let me understand this question. So, random business. You're working at Taco Bell.
Anywhere you work, yeah. You're working,
Working at Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe. Offices.
For the state, for whatever.
Okay. What are some other...
Yeah, what is one aspect of professional wrestling that you wish other companies would incorporate into their business? I can tell you mine, but go ahead.
I think that in order to get either a promotion or a raise, you should have to go in and cut a promo.
No, you stole mine, you rat master.
Yes, yes. Yeah. You should have to go in and cut like an old school, like shouty 80s promo, like, I'm in here 6 days a week, 6 to 10, every day.
Every day.
Then I take a lunch break. And then I come back.
And you're still not even here.
I do more before 9 a.m. than most people get done by 5 p.m.
I like that idea. I was going to go a different direction with the cutting of the promos and the fact if you have a grievance. A promo is hilarious in wrestling because you say it to everyone, but it's incredibly direct. So you can just air whatever grievances you have with a coworker out. Like, in an incredibly direct way, being like, "Oh, I'm talking to you, whoever. I'm talking to you."
That's right.
But like, you're saying it to everyone, so it's fucking hilarious. Right. So that would be the aspect.
Your data sheets are never on time. Yeah. Every time it's misspelled, learn spell check.
Yeah. But with a raise,
the cream of the crop rising to the top.
Yeah. With a raise, you get to promote yourself as well. You'd be like, "I do this, and you don't do that." When I come in the office, you tuck tail and you go to the water cooler every time. Yeah, I got fired up on that one. That or the easy answer is the pageantry. Wearing ridiculous outfits with tassels and stuff.
I was going to say, oh yeah.
Like intro music would be fun too.
That'd be great. Every time you walk into the office, you get your intro music playing.
Yeah.
That'd be dope. I was going to say random chair shots. You should just be allowed to once a month just hit a coworker over the head with a chair.
I like all these ideas, actually. We might be on to something. Just handle business a different way.
That's right.
So, yeah, that'd be a lot of fun, though. So, yeah, great question. What other questions we got, sir?
Let's see.
Yeah, I would love to cut a promo on some of my coworkers. I'm friends with them, but I'd be like, "You old bag of bones, you ain't never did nothing with your life."
I love it. Let's see. What else we got here? Let me look. Oh, what was the most surprising cameo in a movie?
Man, I'd have to think on that one. Do you got one for us?
I got a couple. I mean, obviously there's Tom Cruise in Tropic Thunder.
That's a great one.
I mean, hidden under mountains of prosthetics and makeup, and even to the point where you're like, "Is that Tom Cruise? That looks like Tom Cruise, but not like Tom Cruise."
Yeah, that might be.
Let's see, what else we got? I would say David Bowie in Zoolander, just because he's not one that often appears on film, so it's always nice to see, like, hey, that's fucking David Bowie.
Yeah, I would say as a cameo, they can't really, like, I don't know if Les Grossman is a cameo, though. He's a character, he plays too. I think a cameo is like, oh, hey, it's whoever. So, like, Chuck Norris in Dodgeball. Was a great cameo. Yeah, fucking Chuck Norris. At the very end, yeah.
That's right.
He's the one that gives him the final thumbs up for the sudden death.
That's right.
So, like, I would say that one is a good one. I think Brad Pitt, the story behind how he was in Deadpool 2, and he just did it for a cup of coffee from Ryan Reynolds.
Sure, right.
Obviously, he knows he's going to cash in a favor, which he did later in a different movie. But, maybe Chuck Norris was a good one.
Okay, so under that premise, I would say that Mark Hamill in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. Although he's playing a character, they actually have text on the screen that says, "Hey kids, it's Mark Hamill."
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, that might, yeah.
So, yeah. Him breaking through the wall as Cockknocker and doing his Joker voice.
Yeah, that might be. Yeah, that's a pretty good one. At least on our circle, that might be it. So,
I think that's pretty good.
Good question. All right. Well, I can't think of any other for now, but I'll ask another question unless you got other cameos.
I'm trying to think as far as...
Most of them are kind of too winky at the camera, and they all like are kind of interchangeable.
Yeah, like Elon Musk in Iron Man 2, or like, I mean, any of the Stan Lee cameos, but even then, he's playing a character. He's not playing Stan Lee.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a cameo, but I don't know. I don't really know the definitive line. I guess you could qualify Tom Cruise as, that's such a good character though.
Yeah.
All right, we're gonna move on to another question. Ooh, this is right up my alley. Video game adaptations into movies and TV are finally starting to get good. I could not agree more.
Okay.
With Last of Us, Fallout, and Mario being critically and commercially successful.
Sure.
What games would you like to see adapted? I got a couple I could rattle off. And I think we've touched on this question close before, but...
I think so. I mean, immediately off the top of my head, I'm going to say Red Dead Redemption.
That's the answer, yes.
In a world, especially where we're doing a cinematic universe, I mean, how easy is it to do a Western? Especially one where the storyline is just... It's already laid out in front of you, so all you got to do is just follow the video game, you know? Like... There's a reason why that's one of the best-selling video games of all time, because it not only is compelling story play, compelling gameplay, but the story is just so immersive and you care about these characters. So,
I agree with that, and I think that there's a certain liberty which people can take with adaptations that really works. And my fear is, and I'll give you a couple that I was going to say. Red Dead Redemption is like number one on the list.
Sure.
Mass Effect. I've never played those games, but I know it's a massive base. It's a huge game about space and how all your decisions kind of play out throughout the trilogy and things like that.
Yeah, it's space politics and sort of like meeting characters for the first time and how you interact with them will determine your future storyline with them.
Absolutely. So Mass Effect, if they finally, I don't know why they don't do this, but for Star Wars, do a Knights of the Old Republic.
Yes.
Like, do that.
Yes, yes.
Metroid, obviously, we've said before, but Castlevania would be one that would be easy to do because you can actually follow the formula of get new item, unlock new area.
Sure.
Go to area, backtrack, and you know, and there'd be fun ways to play with
now
that.
Now you get the vampire whip. Now you get the sacred heart. Now you get the flaming torch. Now you get the this magic spell, that magic spell.
A new ability.
Going through Dracula's castle, finding constant upgrades in order to get you to the next, you know, big boss.
Right. Yeah. So there was a fun way to do that. And then at the end, using them all in unison. But what you were talking about earlier about it'd be one thing to follow, I think, like why TV shows to bring into comic books, why like The Walking Dead work and like The Boys and some of the other ones work is because those who, even The Last of Us, those who played the game don't, if you just follow it beat for beat, it's going to be like, well, I can just go play the game then.
Exactly.
You know?
Right.
And what I don't want to happen is with anybody is let's just go with Red Dead Redemption. Is don't just make a good Western and call it Red Dead Redemption.
Yes.
Also don't just be like, it's a Western and we just happen to throw in a couple nods to the game and a couple Easter eggs here and there. Like, because then, like, just don't, like, the world of these video games, like, what I don't want to happen is what makes the game special in terms of long-form interactive stories. Yes. Obviously, you have to take the interactive aspect out of it, but the interactive part is the world. That's what you're living in. And if you can bring that world and write something creative, like, don't...
Well, like speaking specifically to Red Dead Redemption is when you play that game, you have an emotional connection to the protagonist. Like, you have an emotional connection to either Arthur Morgan or John Marston. Yeah. So you care about the influence that they have in the world. You care about how the world reacts to them, and so that's sort of part of it. Is it is a good protagonist, and it is a morality story of I could be the most dastardly, you know, pistolero in the West, or maybe I should just be a good family homesteader and just concern myself with making my life better for my family. That's sort of the dynamic of the game. You can touch on different aspects of that in the movie.
Absolutely.
But it's important that you have keystones or touchstones that relate to the game. You know, like you can't just create a new character like they did with the recent Mortal Kombat movie, you know, where they just created this whole new protagonist who had never appeared in any of the games, and then all of a sudden we as the audience are expected to care about him because, well, no, I've never met this guy. How does he tie into the Mortal Kombat world? What are we dealing with here? Like, I don't want them to just come up with some new protagonist, set it in a Western, and then just have tertiary or like secondary references to Red Dead and call it a Red Dead game.
I think you, yes and no, in the sense of Mortal Kombat, you had 12 games and it's a fighting game. So, like, I don't need a new character. There's like 3,500, there's 3,500 characters in the Mortal Kombat franchise. So, that I understand that example. But, like, with Fallout, it is a new protagonist. But the one thing I would ask any of them to do in any of these worlds is, like, you have to make a rich enough story in the world. And whatever story you're telling, like, these worlds are so rich already that it's not gotten out of, it needs to not interfere with the game, like the timeline, the tone, the feel of the game, and all of that stuff. It needs to fit into the world. So if you are using, like, the character in Fallout is a new character in the TV show. But in no way does it feel like this takes place out of the Fallout world. It's almost like a expansion pack.
Sure, okay.
So it's like, oh, this is just a canonical story that's taking place elsewhere in the wasteland. So if you're doing that with like Red Dead Redemption, what are some of the things that makes Red Dead Redemption special and bring those things in? Bring the fallout of like some of these things that John Marston does. So if you're doing it in that way, then cool, give me a new character, as if it's just kind of like, here's a side mission thing that is also, there's more than three, otherwise it becomes Star Wars. It's like, oh, so we only care about these three people and the entire Western frontier.
And I hear you on that, but also like, you can't do like the recent heavy metal series, not heavy, Twisted Metal.
Right.
Series, you know, as fun as that was, there was very little car combat, you know, upgrading,
right,
you know, battle royale kind of thing, that which is the whole focus of the game. A lot of it was very Mad Max or very like Blade Runner in terms of like, dude has to go from point A to point B, or here's the next mission, you know, like, how do I just get down the road, earn enough money to get me enough gasoline and ammunition to get to the next checkpoint, which is okay, but that really wasn't the focus of the game. The focus of the game was chaos and car combat and blowing each other to smithereens in glorious fashion. And yes, they kind of touch on that in the very last episode, but that's not why I tuned into it. You know?
Right.
As fun as it was, it just wasn't that.
Right. I get it. So yeah, I guess those would be our qualifiers in terms of what we would want to see. And if you are going to touch any of these games, how to do it. Good question, though.
Right, here we go. All right, next question. Let's see. If you could insert yourself into a movie to change the outcome, what movie would it be and what would you change?
Oh, man. I'm not prepared for this question. I don't know. I'm curious on your thoughts on this one. Give me a minute to mull it over.
So, if I could insert anything into a movie to change the outcome, I would do, let me think, I would do Leni Riefenstahl, Triumph of the Will, which is basically just Nazi propaganda.
Yeah.
But then I would insert like just big black Mandingo hanging dong, like a la like Fight Club.
That's not yourself though.
I have to insert myself?
Isn't that the question?
I mean, one of them might be me. Who knows? You know, just for comparison's sake. But yeah,
Is that even the question? Is if you could insert yourself into...
Let me reread this. Oh, it is. Insert yourself. Yes. Well, it still stands. Yeah. Okay. I would just insert hanging dong of like huge black motherfuckers like, look at this.
Look at this. This is what you should fear. Yeah, that'd be hilarious.
Just because it like, it's intercut with like Aryan gods, you know, like hurling discus and flexing, and then all of a sudden, like, smash cut to like, look at this Coke can, motherfucker.
The old Pringles can.
It's like an Evian bottle.
I don't know.
Thick ones.
Yeah.
The 32 ounces.
Yes. I guess that does change the outcome of the movie.
But yeah, it does.
Yeah. If I could insert myself in a movie, I would insert myself into about 10 minutes into the movie Mother, and I would walk up to Jennifer Lawrence and I go, don't do this movie. It makes no sense. I think you're dead or something. And then I'd walk off. That's what I would do. So I hated that movie with a passion, dude. It changed the whole outcome of that. It just gets weirder. It makes less and less sense the more they try to explain it. It's all this symbolism and crap that Javier Bardem just talks to you about, and you repeat the same day, and it gets weirder. Just don't do it. Just get out of here.
I would insert myself into the Tommy Wiseau classic, The Room, where I literally just pop in off screen somewhere and just go like, "What you been watching?" and then dip out.
I would take him when he's making love to what looks like that poor woman's navel and or stomach region.
Yeah.
And I would just slide him down a few inches and go, there. Continuity's sake.
Continuity. Just give a thumbs up to the camera and walk off.
Now we're
just
good.
A wink and a nod.
Yeah, now we're good there. All right, we can keep going with silly stuff. Yeah, those are a couple good ones. All right. Do we want to ask this question? No, we don't. About Marvel and DC?
I mean, I got a couple other. Okay, that's a deep discussion.
It's about comic book universes.
Let's see.
Teaser. We'll tease that question.
Let's see.
I got one. Ready to go here.
Sure, go ahead.
If you could have any guest on the show, who would it be? And I'm going to pick alive and dead.
Oh, okay. So one living, one dead.
Yeah, yeah. Or give me a couple. It doesn't matter. It's our show.
Let's see. If I could pick anybody to have a guest, to be a guest on the show, I mean, dead would probably be Stan Lee.
It's a great one.
I mean, just...
That's a great one.
And probably for very selfish reasons, like, not that I would have some all-important question that I would want to ask him, but I would just want to communicate to him, like, hey, just so you know, since you're dead, you had a lot of influence in my life, and I really appreciate that. And so, like, I know you hear this all the time, and it's not like you need my validation for, like, well, thanks, true believer. Now it made it all worthwhile.
Well, just hearing, like, that, though.
But just to be like, hey, you did something really special, and it meant a lot to me. Like, thank you for that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you would stand out over him. Hey, see what I did there? Stan Lee's a great answer. I would have to say one person I kind of just happened to fall into a rabbit hole kind of recently and started listening to, Bill Hader.
Okay.
Is actually, and you can Google some of his interview or just YouTube some of his interviews. He does one with the Criterion Collection, who is like the best DVD
of course, compilation yeah.
company in the world. If they do a DVD or Blu-ray, they do it correct with everything you'd ever want to know about the movie. And part of it is he gets to go in there and pick out, quote-unquote, what movies he's taken with
him. Yeah, just goes to the vault and is like, ooh, I like this one.
Yeah, and but then afterwards he does an interview with him. And that dude is, and I said this word earlier, so I'm trying not to overuse it, but he is a cinephile in the most prominent or most, like, definition of the word sure, ever. Yeah. Like, he'll deep dive and he can tell you where he was when he was watching, like, RoboCop. Like, his dad was a big influence on it. And, like, instead of going out with a lot of, like, oh, let's go out and parties. Like, I just like watching movies. Like,
sure,
And just his knowledge of things was, I was mind blown by it. And he's also happens to be one of the funniest people to ever do it. Like, just a genuinely good hang. So to pick his brain and just have him be like, you guys don't know what the F you're talking about. And either school us or laugh along with us. That would be a great time. Him or the obvious answer is Jonny Favreau, because it's Jonny Favreau.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Johnny Legs.
Oh, Johnny, yeah, that's any of the what you've been watching Wall of Famers. If I get one, though, man, which, yeah.
So that's your alive one.
Yeah, probably Bill Hader right now.
Okay,
yeah.
So what's your dead?
Ooh, hold on. Also the RZA. I would be able to chop it up, because I would just want him to school me on all the actual kung fu flicks. I pretend to know a lot about him. He'd be like...
He would probably name some shit where you'd be like, I've never heard of that. He's like, yeah, I know.
Yeah, he's just
It showed only in Brooklyn from 1981 to September 1981 to October 1981, and if you weren't there, you missed it.
Yeah, just hanging out with the Abbot of the Wu-Tang is just like, hey man, you can talk about whatever the hell you want. Dead though, Alfred Hitchcock, or I wonder what it would sound like.
I could dig that
if we could. Yeah, Alfred Hitchcock. Or if we could get...
Let me tell you about cinema.
If we could get a drunk Orson Welles on the show, possibly. I wonder what that would sound like.
Oh, the French champagne. Known for its class and sophistication. Now there's a new champagne from Palmer Mont.
And that's how you tee it up, ladies and gentlemen.
I would love that. Oh, yeah.
Have a drunk Orson Welles.
What was it like working on Transformers? Like, I don't even remember.
I'm not even going to try to do it. I'm going to let you stay in that lane.
Bring me the fucking peas.
Oh, man.
Let's see. Okay, so...
Alive, I think, is your... You said Stan Lee, so...
Okay, alive. So alive, I would say... I mean, obviously, it's going to be either Kevin Smith. Yeah. That's a good one. Ooh, okay. I thought of another good dead one. Roger Corman. I would love to. I mean, the dude had, God, like what, almost six decades in the business. Like, I would just love to pick his brain and be like, what does it cost to make a movie? And I don't mean like monetarily. I mean like, what is your dedication and like how do you decide like, this is the project I'm going to invest in?
Yeah. also to ask, and this would be a great question to ask him, and he's known for campy B movies, so this be almost an insulting question, but like, how, when do you know to leave well enough alone?
Right, right. You know what I mean? When is too much?
When is it too heavy-handed on the B side, or we gotta keep it, you know, we can't have this looking a certain way, because then we're messing with the tone of it, because then we're doing really expensive shots and stuff. So, what is the, you know, when do you leave well enough alone?
Yeah. Right.
I want to know that from him, for sure. And I can't think of another dead guy. I just wanted to
just do silly I think ones. That's good examples, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. One more question, maybe? And then you want to get out of here?
Sure. Let's do...
Yeah, we have to table the other one, because that's
yeah, the one talking I want to ask. Talking about who would win in a fight between Marvel and DC. That's going to be a whole discussion unto itself.
Yeah.
Oh, here's a really good one. Here we go. What are your worst movie grievances, i.e., the moment you saw in a movie that made you say, "Aw, fuck you"? And I think that's interpreted as like, "Ah, fuck you."
Yeah, yeah. Where I was with you till I wasn't with you anymore.
Sure, or like something happened in a movie and you just went, "Nah, come on. Like, give me a fucking break."
Okay. Okay, I got a couple that come to mind. I don't know if this... I'd like to revisit this question with more time on the clock.
Okay. I can give you a couple that just came to mind off the top of my head.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Michelle Pfeiffer dunking on inner city kids in Dangerous Minds.
Oh, you mean like actually on the basketball court?
Yeah, yeah. Like, she's wearing the like, Joey Chews. Jimmy Chews, yeah.
Joey Chews. Sorry, I'm not laughing at you. Pat bending on Joey Chews.
But like, she's wearing the like high clomper boots and the tight waisted mom jeans and the leather jacket and like just dunking all these inner city kids. Like, oh, Miss Catwoman got game, right? Like, and then all of a sudden that's supposed to inspire them to like, maybe she can teach us a few things about math.
Yeah, she slam dunked on him in the classroom all day.
Well, she sat backwards in a chair, so that's how you know she meant business, but she was cool.
Yeah, that is true. That is very true.
Oh, man. So, yeah, that one. Yeah, where, like, they try to, like, step to her, and she's just like, oh, I got game, son. About to ball y'all up.
Yeah, okay, I got one.
Breaking ankles out here.
And she shook them up. I mean, it played the character, though. That is not a bad movie, though. All right, I got one that's... You're going to be like, that's the part. But the movie The Happening with Mark Wahlberg. So the whole premise is like the vegetation, the plant life, the flora.
Turns on humanity.
And makes people commit, like it makes them kill themselves or whatever. Mm-hmm. And ultimately it's like they only show the quote unquote happening. And the whole joke is like, it is happening. What? It? Where? Everywhere. They're fighting.
I want that to be the new tagline from the movie. It is happening. What?
It.
Where? Everywhere. Who? So, everyone.
Yeah, so it's an invisible enemy in which they fight. And the way they figure it out is like, it's the plants. It's Mark Wahlberg sounding like Don Knotts for some reason. It's the plants.
It's the plants.
And so they outrun the
wind. Golly gee, Andy.
Yeah. And so they one of the points, they outrun the wind, which is just... I was even with it on that.
Talking about the scene where they're running in the field and he and Zoe Deschanel are like holding hands like, keep going, keep going. And the wind is like literally blowing right behind them in the tall grass. And I'm like, that's not how wind works.
Like when somebody shoots a chain gun from a helicopter and they're always just inches behind the person running. Right. You just cut them off. And
like, that's not how it works. You can just walk it up. Just okay.
Mow them straight through, yeah. Anyway,
shoot ahead.
Yeah, exactly. But no.
Easy. You just don't lead them as much.
Good quote. Good quote. But no, there's a scene in that movie, as ridiculous as the premise is, and this is when you're going to be like, that was the scene. One of the original What You've Been Watching Wall of Famers, Johnny Legs.
Great alliteration.
Yeah, there you go. John Leguizamo is in the movie, and he's getting news over the radio about how the plants are killing people. And Johnny Legs, with you pointed this out, Brian O'Halloran of Clerks fame.
Yeah. He's the one driving the car.
Yeah. So yeah, they run to a vehicle and they get in, and as they're getting the news over the radio, it's the plants and it's coming in through the wind, and they start closing all the car vents for the air conditioning. And it zooms out, and it's like, they're in a Jeep.
Like a soft
top. A cloth top Jeep. Which, if you've ever been in one of those, it is not airtight at all. It's flapping and loud, and it's like, yeah. It's... And so they sit there and they do it, and then there's something else that they reveal, like, oh, we left this open.
Oh, there's a tear in the ceiling.
Yeah, that's right.
A small, like, pinpoint hole, and he's like, oh, we're fucked. And I'm like, you were fucked well before.
Yeah, and it's weird that I was with that movie up until that point, and I go, they're in a Jeep. If you need that to happen, if you need them to die, like, have a bird fly and crash the window or something. Like, then, oh, now it's...
Yeah, just put them in, like, in a Prius. Hardtop.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they're in a Jeep, and it's like...
Put them in a pickup truck, and then all of a sudden somebody hits them, and it
cracks.
Yeah, the window's cracked, yeah.
Yeah, it's something. You know, you look at the back window, and you realize, yeah, there's a better way to do
that.
We
left the pickup bed truck window open the whole time. Whoops.
Yeah, and you didn't latch the latch or whatever. You know, you ever know those old school S10s you could slide back and clip that bad boy closed? But yeah, there was a better way to do that than a cloth top Jeep. And that was when I was like, I'm out. The whole premise was ridiculous, and I was with you for whatever reason.
That was the jumping off point in that movie for you?
That was the final step. Plus, they killed Johnny Legs at that point, so what else am I watching this for? You know what I mean? Hey, took out my star player, big dog. It was a wrap for me at that point. All right. What was yours, though, sir? I got one more if you don't have one.
Let's see. Here we go. Okay. Yeah, so my big, like, aw, fuck you. The seesaw battle in Daredevil between...
the movie you're talking about?
Yeah, yeah. Between Ben Affleck and Jennifer Garner, where they meet and they're flirting, and then they decide, like, oh, in order to complete our flirtation, we must fight. And then they literally jump on a seesaw, and all the kids are, like, running around like, oh, shit, no! Like, come on. Like, not one of those kids would be like, you know, that dude kind of moves like Daredevil. Like, I know he's blind and shit, but he's kind of really good at this. And also, like, she kind of moves like Daredevil, so maybe she's Daredevil. But, like, there's no point in reality where young kids are going to be like, yeah, this is normal.
Yeah, yeah. So your issue is with the kids, not the way the scene is, but the reaction of the children had you out on that?
Yeah, oh, because it makes no sense. But, yeah. But also, like...
It's funny, like you just said, that's the point.
Like, why would you just all of a sudden involve yourselves in a kumite in order to flirt with each other? Like, you have to prove that you're worth my love. Like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, you truly do not know someone until you fight them. Yeah, like, nah.
Let's see. What's another good one?
I got one for you. If we're on comic book movies still.
Sure.
I'm not even... It's Spider-Man 3, but not the scenes that you might think. This one's really petty.
Okay.
So you got Venom, one of the best Spider-Man characters.
Oh, you're talking about the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man 3.
Yeah, Spider-Man 3. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So you get Venom, who's one of the best Spider-Man characters ever created, right? Uh-huh. And one, you cast him with Topher Grace. I'll even roll with you on that. But there's a moment at the very end, in the middle of a climactic battle. This is after all the dance sequence, which was just atrocious. That wasn't where they lost me. It's when...
Although that's a good one.
That's a good one, yeah.
Where all of a sudden, just Peter Parker starts walking down the street, just like, I'm doing my dance.
Yeah, or he's doing the... Or even the whole emo phase thing, where like he's...
Day on this.
Yeah. That wasn't what did it. It was when Topher Grace pulled back the symbiote over his face and just did the little Eric Foreman, like, from that 70s show, Headcock, and just being, like, trying to retort with Peter Parker. I'm like, all right, I'm out. You've officially ruined Venom now. I'm not in on this at all anymore.
You took one of the greatest anti-heroes / supervillains ever and completely pissed in his mouth.
Yeah. Yeah, you really did. That whole movie missed, man, on a lot of different ways. James Franco on the little snowboard glider was just like, all right, I'm out.
Yeah, yeah. That was, yeah.
That one got away.
I don't know if that one was Sam Raimi's fault. I think that might have been No. I think it was the tragedy of rewrites and hey, we did a focus group and they want to see more Green Goblin, and Sam Raimi was like, I already shot the movie, like, that's all the Green Goblin you get.
Him being emo and him dancing is 1,000% Sam Raimi, though. Like, there's not a world that that's not his choice to do. I'm sorry, I can't buy that for a second. But anyways, yeah, that was the moment where I go, all right, I'm out. Seeing, yeah, there's a lot in Star Wars I could do too. Finding out Rey is Palpatine's granddaughter was
that was so dumb.
I'm out.
She could have just been like, you've already established that the Force can just make births or pregnancies happen just by sheer will. So why isn't she the new Anakin? Like, I don't know who the father is. I just woke up pregnant one day. Like,
yeah, it's or maybe it doesn't matter. Fuck it. Maybe or it doesn't
who
matter.
Who cares? You're Rey nobody.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me see. Another good one I have is Al Pacino in Scent of a Woman when he's driving that Ferrari completely blind and not Chris Pratt.
Chris O'Donnell.
Robin. Yeah. Yeah. Pre-Chris Pratt is sitting in the passenger seat and is just like, turn left. And like he completely makes the turn like perfectly. Like, not just like, turn right, too much, fuck, fire hydrant, fuck, we're all dead.
Yeah. The movie, yeah, you could take that entire scene out.
And then he gets stopped by the cop, and the cop is looking directly at him, and Al Pacino's like pulling a Stevie Wonder, like, I don't know what you're talking about, officer, just swaying back and forth, like, meanwhile, Chris O'Donnell's trying to back it up, like, ah, he's old, and don't worry about it, he hasn't had a license since 1963, and... we just wanted to do this, and the cop's like, all right, you seem like two perfectly acceptable white young gentlemen.
Right.
Reshoot that scene with Cuba Gooding Jr. and fucking...
especially, yeah.
And fucking, what's his name? Mr. Tibbs. Mr. Tibbs. Sidney Poitier.
One of the most prolific black actors, like his importance in Hollywood history. We're like, oh, in the heat of the night. A great theme song, by the way.
In the heat of the night.
It's a hell of an open right there. Oh, man.
Anyway, yeah. So reshoot that with those two previous actors, yeah. And tell me it makes sense.
Yeah, especially in the 90s. That ain't happening.
Oh, man. Oh, fuck.
Yeah. There's a couple. I'm sure. Write us in, please, and let us know what. At what point in what movie did they lose you? Where you could suspend your disbelief no more. And you're like, yep, that's it. I'm sure there's a million that I'm not thinking of, but those are the ones that came to the top of my head.
Oh, God.
Somebody's like, oh, what about The Matrix, Marcus? I'm like, hey, why don't you go find something else to do?
Why don't you eat a bag of digital dicks?
Yeah. Yeah, you could do that.
Bunch of ones and zeros just flowing down your throat.
At you. Anyways. Have we got any more questions? We want to leave on a high note.
We can leave on a high note.
Okay. Yeah, that was a good one.
You got another one?
Oh, no, I don't. I'm saying, I think that was a high note.
So I just fucked that up.
Yeah. You're good. I don't know, if you got another question, fire away though, man.
Let's see.
I'm having fun. We can...
I am too. Let's see. Oh, here's a good one. I got one. How do you work the three seashells in Demolition Man?
Oh, man, we should have left on. Who knows? Yeah. How would you do that? Well, you have to have two hands, obviously. You clamp one like a C, and then you pull, and then you scrape with the other one.
Wait, so you think you're literally grabbing shit out of your butt?
I think so. Well, not out directly, at the remnants.
And then but you're using a seashell to...
I don't know. I'm guessing, wipe your butt? Yeah, I mean, that's what they do in the movie. Came up with the premise.
See, I think each one is like one is a bidet, like it just sprays the butthole.
What, the seashell itself sprays?
Yeah. It's the future, Marcus.
Okay. I thought they were just talking about seashells in terms of like, I don't know.
No, they're not. I don't think they're actual. I think they're futuristic seashells.
I think they're literal seashells. Like, I mean, obviously not like straight from the beach, but I mean somebody manufactured whatever toilet paper they use to be modeled after a seashell, and they scrape it clean. It's ergonomically correct for that crevice in there.
That sounds horrible.
And they scrape it all clean, go rinse it off, and that's the end of that.
So your explanation of the seashells is they just go back to using like corn cobs to wipe their ass?
I mean... they got rid of toilet paper. That seemed to be working fine. I don't know what what fluoride does to the human brain in our drinking water after years of exposure. I don't know, bro. That was the part of the movie I was out on. Like, what the hell are you talking about? It was all this futuristic stuff. You took away the most basic necessity? Nah, bro. You don't remember COVID times and we keep those sacred. Bunch of bullshit.
And on that note, yeah. It's been a fun mailbag, brother. I appreciate
Always
it.
Always a pleasure. Truly, write us in at whatchabeenwatchinpodcast@gmail.com. Hit us up in our DMs on either Facebook Messenger or Instagram.
Yeah.
And yeah, please get them in. We, as you can see, we do love to answer them. It may take a while.
But we get to it.
We will get to it. We just got to get a full clip. And we don't want to overdo the mailbag episodes. So until they start coming in more rapidly, then we'll fire away all day.
That's right.
So, all right. On that note, I would say to anybody out there, go scroll your local listings. Go scroll your Netflixes and go watch a movie.
And talk about it with someone you love.
Yes, they're real seashells.